morning. Thanks for this opportunity to present my dissertation research to you this morning. The majority of my nursing career has taken place overseas, working with underserved and marginalized populations. Currently, I work for a relief and development organization as the health coordinator, which means I'm a resource person for the health-related projects we have in over 70 countries. And so this research was kind of birthed from my experiences in nursing so far. And there's my required slide. The artwork that you're going to see in these slides is used with permission from Costanza Knight, who has done a series of watercolor paintings as a reflection to the African-American folktale And the People Could Fly. And when I found her artwork and was thinking about this research, it really depicted a lot of the findings, and so she did give me permission to use that. Gender-based violence describes various acts against persons that are directly related to their gender and are used for the purpose of disempowerment or domination. This abuse can be physical, it can be sexual, it can be emotional, including deprivation and neglect. A report from the World Health Organization says that globally about 35% of women have experienced some form of violence in their lifetime. And a lot of this, the majority of this violence is intimate partner violence. But the WHO has also called for additional research in the area of global non-intimate partner violence just to improve the understanding of the consequences on women's health. And as I began this research, I realized there is quite a gap in research as it pertains to non-intimate partner violence. There are several well-known studies on intimate partner violence, but the non-partner violence is kind of few and far between. And also, as I began speaking with different humanitarian organizations, they were noticing this gap in research, stating that without the research, it was difficult for them to develop their evidence-based practice, and also, more practically, it was difficult for them to write proposals for funding for their projects. The research question was, what is the experience of women who have survived sexual and gender-based violence in conflict-affected countries? And the purpose of this study is to describe the experience of these survivors in an effort to build a body of knowledge that can contribute to the development of evidence-based practice that responds specifically to these survivors, and also to bring awareness to not only the nursing profession, but other healthcare professionals about these experiences. I did choose to approach the research atheoretically. However, I wanted to use a philosophical underpinning of social justice. John Rawls is a philosopher that has developed some characteristics of social justice. Rawls has what he calls the liberty principle, and that says that there are basic universal requirements of respect for all people as a starting point for social justice. And as I began to do the research and gather the interviews, it was pretty clear that there was a pretty marked lack of respect for the women as that basic level that Rawls talked about. And this was evidence, I could see this demonstrated through both the perpetrator's actions and the reactions of family and community members. I don't think it was unreasonable I don't think it is unreasonable to expect a baseline of respect for social justice, but I found it difficult to apply Rawls' theory in this particular situation where there was a breakdown of both moral and ethical values. Rawls' theory also doesn't have a clear framework that was conducive to explaining the findings of the study. Madison Powers and Ruth Faden, however, have built upon Rawls' theory of social justice from their expertise in the disciplines of philosophy and bioethics, respectively. They presented a theory of social justice that's concerned with human well-being rather than principles that must be accepted by all persons as a basis for social justice. Powers and Faden emphasized designing social structures and institutions that are committed to the common good and focus on the well-being of groups and populations. The theory is described as having both a positive and a negative aim, and the positive aim focuses on the improvement of health as one of these dimensions, and the negative aim is prevention or amelioration of the adverse effect of social injustice on well-being. This was a qualitative study. I used a narrative design. I felt that the narrative methodology kind of gives you an opportunity to transform story into a form of inquiry that produces an outcome that gives voice to the data. And one of my main purposes for doing this research was to give voice to these women and to their stories. For this study, the interviews, I interviewed women who had survived conflict-related rape in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, which I'm going to refer to as DRC. The data from the interview was analyzed and compiled into one biographic narrative, so I took all of the stories and made one narrative for them, for all the stories. But then I also analyzed the individual narratives and to look for any themes that would emerge from the data. This is a map of the area where the research was done. You can see on the lower left-hand corner, the continent of Africa, the big red country, is DRC. And then in the larger picture, the circle is the area where I traveled to do the interviews. And this area, in this section of DRC, borders Uganda and Rwanda on the east side. At the time of data collection, the residents of this area were still experiencing violence and unrest from the various militia groups. In fact, when I came back to Goma after being in that northern region, they had told me that not too far away from where I had been that week, there had been another village where a number of women had been raped by militia. The different groups represent internal political and tribal conflicts from the early 1980s and before, as well as armed groups that have come in from after the genocide in Rwanda in the 1990s. One of the complexities of the conflict in eastern DRC is that there are so many different factions involved in the fighting that the people don't even know who these folks may be with or without. And as a result of that, when the women talked about being raped, they would just call them bandits because it's so confusing that the folks don't even know who they are or what they're representing. For the logistical details and the access to the participants, I worked in cooperation with an NGO that currently provides safe houses, counseling, and referral services to survivors of sexual gender-based violence. Although I do speak Swahili, which is prevalent in this area where the data were collected, I also recruited a research assistant with that collaborating agency to make sure that the translation and the transcription were accurate. So the sample for this narrative, I did 14 interviews with women. Their age range was between 18 and 63 years old. And they were recommended by the counselors of the NGO that I had spoke of earlier. And one of the things that we made sure that the counselors knew exactly what the research was going to be, what questions were going to be asked, and then asked them to recommend women for invitation that they felt were stable enough and this would not cause additional trauma to them. So I really relied on their expertise for the choices. And all of the women were over 18, and we made sure that they were not currently in any mental health crisis. I'll defend this dissertation on December 1st, so unfortunately I can't officially give you the findings. But what I can do is share with you some of the data that was collected and allow you to experience how these stories flow among the six dimensions of well-being that Powers and Faden used to characterize social justice. Powers and Faden describe six distinct dimensions of well-being that are central to everyone. They clarify that it's not necessary to reach some common threshold in every dimension, and yet to have a decent life, but that well-being can be affected seriously by a deficiency in any one or more of these dimensions. So the six essential dimensions that were presented by Powers and Faden include health, personal security, respect, attachment, self-determination, and reasoning. And the different sizes of the bubbles that have the names in them reflect a bit the interviews that I did and how much was spoken about each of these dimensions throughout the stories. Though the context is maybe dissimilar in other settings, women who experience sexual and gender-based violence in the context of the U.S. or anywhere in the world also need care that considers all of these dimensions and how they have been affected by that. Now I want to read you some of the data from the research, and I also just want to warn you that it's disturbing. All of the interviews were disturbing, as you can imagine, but I just wanted to say that beforehand. And so this is an interview from one of the young women. One night, I was home with my older sister and my brother when soldiers came to our home. There was a group, and they came so that they could kidnap us. They took my brother, and one of them started putting his fingers in his mouth. They tied our arms behind our backs, and they obliged my brother to rape my sister. Then they mixed ashes in water and told me to drink it. They kidnapped us, and they went with us to the bush. They tied my sister and I to trees. Then they started raping us. They took sticks and pieces of cloth and started inserting them into our vaginas. They beat us severely, and when we were weakened, they left us in the bush. At dawn, we were alone, but they had kidnapped our brother, and they took him far away from us. When we got back home, we started sitting in cold water. We were just there and didn't start any medical treatment. After a while, when we came here, we were taken for treatment, and I discovered that I was pregnant. I kept the pregnancy until I delivered a baby. I didn't know that once you were raped, you should go for medical treatment within 3 days. We were ashamed because there were others who knew what had happened to us, and they were mocking us and making fun of us. I was also angry because I was pregnant, and until I delivered the baby, I was very, very upset. Whenever I remember what happened to me, I can cry because I feel pain in my heart and in my head. Whenever I see the child, my eyes start aching. I always remember what happened to me when they raped me. I will always dream to go back to school. Then I may not have time to think about what happened to me. I could be more stable emotionally. I felt as if there were a burden in me, like a big shadow, which is overshadowing me. So this is just one of the 14 stories that I gathered as I did the interviews. And I have to say that it was, I think it helped with the methodology that as I heard these stories, I felt very, very convicted that however the data was revealed in the research, I had to bring voice to these women. It was so humbling at the end. All of the women knew what the research was for, what the interview was for, and at the end, to have them thank me was very humbling. But what they did ask was, we want people to hear our stories. We want people to hear our stories. Nurses play a role in health and welfare of individuals and populations around the world. Historically, nurses have also played a vital role in advocating for attention and action related to social justice aspects of health and healthcare. I'm hoping this research can be a starting point to inform nurses and other healthcare providers in countries in and beyond DRC who may encounter women patients who have experienced conflict-related sexual and gender-based violence. Building upon the historical foundation of nursing leaders who were passionate about social justice, this study provides an opportunity to use the findings to inform our practice of the experiences of women who have survived conflict-related sexual and gender-based violence. Care for this population must consider the impact traumatic events have on multiple aspects of a survivor's well-being beyond the physical. Health responses that incorporate social justice into practice consider not only the outcome of injustice, but work toward preventing injustice in each of the dimensions.